The author of a number of books, the Leventhal series, Tillich trilogy, the Bradley Creature from My Closet series, and I have a brand new series that starts this next year called Witherwood as well, which is kind of exciting. And I love writing, and I've been doing it for quite some time now, and I'm honored to be here. Yeah, clapping, please.
My name is Rebecca Nessa. I'm best known probably for writing the Young Kevin Eggs series with Kevin Gordon Anderson. Also written Junior Jedi Knights, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and original series like Crystal Doors and Star Challengers. Almost everything from middle grade to young adult. And I've written 35 something like that book so far.
I'm Kevin Anderson. Because of you guys making me talk so much, I don't have much of a voice left.
Can you hear him?
Yeah.
Okay.
And as of next week, I will have been married to this woman for 22 years. I've written about 120 books, and 39 of them with her. And I do sleep in a guest bedroom every once in a while.
We always agree.
I've written a whole bunch of Star Wars books and Dune novels and the Saga of Seven Sons. I've got a really fun new series that features Dan Shamble's zombie private investigator. And I've published a whole bunch of other novels. I would tell you to all rush to the dealer's room to buy our books, but we came here with 23 cases of books and we have 3.5 left. So, this is a lot. And with Rebecca, me, Dave Barlin, and Brandon Sanderson, and Eric Flint, and James Owen, we run annually a thing called the Superstars Writing Seminars in Colorado Springs, where we teach how to make a career as a writer and what we have to do. So, our advice here, too.
Yeah. I was just listening to Kevin, and I remember when I warned her not to, but you know.
So take that as a don't listen to Peter Farrell.
Anyway, I'm happy to be on the boring old fuck hill. I haven't had these before, so you're not to forgive me. My name is Dave Farland. I also write as Dave Wolverton in science fiction. I'm the coordinating judge of the LN Hubbard Writers and Future Contest. I've written over 50 novels. I've also done screenplays, video games, worked with Eli Ellis in Hollywood, and things like that. That's it.
I was going to say, this is not the old fuck hill. I've wanted to do this for 5 years. Come on. I don't know why I saw one of them. Larry Correa, I'm best known from the Monster Hunter International series, Grim Noir Chronicles. I got a series of military thrillers. My 10th novel will be coming out this summer. So I've been doing this about 5 years. I write for a couple different game companies also, War Machine, American Press, Hero Games, and multiple New York Times bestsellers. And I just kind of write. So I'm feeling a little, overwhelmed here, what they say. So a little bragging. I have the number 2 audiobook in the country right now. I'm only losing to J.K. Rowling. And you guys start a rumor that Larry Correa is just one of J.K. Rowling's pen names. You guys do that for me. That'd be awesome.
Because you write such similar books.
Hey, I you should all tease that right now. You just heard that at Comic Con.
My name is Richard Paul Evans. And I've written 25 novels. I started writing my first fantasy young adult called Michael Bay 3 years ago. And it's been a lot of fun. But I've been doing this a long time. My first book was a little book called The Christmas Box that no one wanted. And went on and sold 8 million copies. So that's what I said about it.
Very nice. As moderator, I'm an African, I know what I'm doing. Do we want to take questions from the crowd, or do you want me to make up questions? This panel is...
You were supposed to plan for this.
I had... I had no idea of this, but even if I had known, I think this is probably the level of planning I would have done. The Okay, so the panel is called What Advice Would You Give? Okay, if we could do that one, right? Or if we could, things we learned from the start.
For a younger son.
Right. So I look at all you guys and I'm kind of overwhelmed by how impressive you are. So what's some great, just inspirational advice that you would give that you've learned from all the hard knocks you've gotten in the road? Let's start with you.
My biggest piece of advice is finish something. If you want to be a writer, you need to finish stories, finish a novel. Don't worry about all the other details of it before you have actually been a writer and written something completely. All of the details, all of the rest of the details come after that. But that was my worst thing. I used to get an idea for a story and start to write it, and then I'd get, I have this great romance novel I want to write. I'd get a few chapters into it, and then I'd go, I've got a science fiction short story that's like exactly like the book Rebecca, and I'm going to start that. I just had bits and pieces of things all over my hard drive, and then after many years of doing this, I met an author named Kevin J. Anderson, who was published and had a whole bunch of stuff in the works, and he was 5 years younger than me. And I wanted to know why he could get published, and I couldn't. Apparently, you have to finish something. So that's the beginning.
Okay, one of our very most important pieces of advice, if you start publishing things and you think you want to be a full-time writer, the most important thing to never, ever, ever forget is
don't quit your day job.
And it's even more important now than ever before because we don't get better. I knew a writer who had a government civil service job with all kinds of benefits, vacation, sick leave, everything, retirement. He sold one short story to Amazon and he quit his day job to become a writer.
Oh. Rookie mistake.
Right. But when you're a writer, you have to buy your own health insurance, which Rebecca and I, the two of us, just the two of us, spend over $23,000 a year, every year, just on health insurance. Out of pocket.
That's not co-pays.
That's not co-pays, which is like another $10,000. So if you have a job that covers you with benefits, gives you, we don't get retirement. I stop writing, I stop making money. So we didn't quit our day job until we had more than a year's worth of expenses in the bank. And then we were living in the California and San Francisco Bay Area, and we moved out of there and lived in we moved to Colorado where it was a lot cheaper. There's all kinds of things that you have to plan for to be a full-time writer, and I'm married to somebody that kind of doesn't really like eating ramen noodles and spam all the time. Now, I try it, she doesn't like that. So
I can show you my spam ramen stir fry.
So anyway, for those of you who are becoming full-time writers, there's a lot that you have to plan for. And if you have a job that covers you with things, stick with it for as long as you possibly can to keep your benefits.
And don't think we're just giving this advice to you because we wrote our first 15 and 10 novels while we were writing full-time, while we were working full-time. So it wasn't something that we practiced what we preached.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. You know, I had health insurance until about 8 years ago, but in the state of Utah, because I'm diabetic, I couldn't buy health insurance. My son had an accident earlier this year. We spent $1.3 million on medical bills. I should say, we've been charged $1.3 million in medical bills. We haven't paid them off yet. We have a booth over number 230. We're trying to get $1.3 million. I'd like to stop by and anyway. But yeah, that's really important. You know, one of the things that as a young writer that I didn't appreciate was that you need to take care of your equipment, you know. I'm, you know, 56 years old, you know, I've got a brain that's starting to go on the fritz, not to mention it, giving...
It was always like that day.
Yeah, well, it's more noticeable now, at least for me. But I also, you know, things like aching backs or a lot of authors get carpal tunnel syndrome. I know authors, nobody raise your hand, I've heard of authors having terrible problems with their nether region from sitting too much. You know, there's all sorts of things that you've got to take care of. And so you know, just going out and exercising every day is just so important. You know, if I could, if I were 26 years old again and I could go kick myself in the butt, it took me a while to start doing that. I think at one point I got up to like 300 pounds and got down, maybe 200, but I'm lower than I did. But taking care of your body is really important.
Now I really feel like the young guy from this panel. No, my nether regions are doing great. Yay! That's going to go out on Twitter now, too. Yes, now you guys all really want to be writers. The biggest piece of advice I can give is, if you want writing to be a career, you need to treat it like a career. Treat it like a job. I've been on a lot of panels so far, and every single panel I've been on, someone's talked about writing a block. Well, what happens when I'm stuck? What happens when my character is built up? You know, every single panel. And honestly, guys, you need to treat it like a job. And so I've said this joke before, but I'm a retired accountant. I'm just a writer now, but I used to be an accountant. And I couldn't go to my boss and say, hey, I've got accountant's block. I don't feel like doing this spreadsheet because my muse isn't talking to me. I'm out the door. So honestly, treat it like a job. So, you know, be professional, set a schedule, say when you're going to write. Rebecca talked about finishing a book. You know, give yourself time to write, butt in seat, hands on keyboard, and work. Treat it like a job, and it will become a job. And I got other advice too, but one of the best piece of advice I ever got actually came from Kevin, so I'm afraid to steal his. So I'll leave that for later. I had a lot. You just go ahead and say it.
Okay, I know, because I think I got my best piece of advice from Kevin. Always work on 10,000 projects at once.
Yeah, I was going to say, best advice I ever got from my career was actually with Kevin Anderson, one of the first cons I went to. I heard him say, be prolific, and I tried to apply that. Honestly, if you're really prolific enough, and you're always writing, you're always turning out new projects, and always accepting new jobs, you don't have time to fail.
Yeah, Kevin calls it the popcorn theory of writing. You know, you throw a bunch of caramel popcorn into the little pan. You don't know which one's going to explode first. And so you just keep a bunch of them in there, and eventually one of them will pop. And you know what? I think that's the best piece of advice I've ever gotten in my life here. You know?
Yeah, that's two of us.
So
you guys are superfluous, so you just have Kevin.
I
feel like I'm talking to this front row here, so how many here want to be writers? Or are writers, we're like, the thing that I realized that I wish I could go back and tell my younger self is that it's really about the platform. I mean, why can't Glenn Beck, he's a radio show host, why can't he write a book and sell it for $1.5 million? Because he has a platform. You know, if you have this huge blog with millions of people on it, you can do that too. And so with my first book, I would do signings, and I would have 1,000 people come to my book signing. And it's like, guess what I didn't do? I didn't collect a single one of their names. So when my next book came out, I mean, I was literally sitting in Raleigh, North Carolina, and someone shows up, and it's like, I have no one there. They were like getting bodyguards for my events, and it's like three old women came. Their canes, like, God, guards, like, can I help you? It's like, if she gets too close with the cane, take her down. It's like, you know what? Because, and then one walk up, she goes, you're not the guy who wrote the Christmas box. I go, yeah. She goes, where are the crowds and what are you doing here? It's like, well, they just didn't get the memo. You'll see this. Well, my Dave Pelzer is a friend of mine. My child called in. Book's been on the New York Times for 5 years. And we're talking, it's like, how come my books are getting smaller and smaller till he's now struggling to get a book sold? It's like, this is a guy who's been on the New York Times for 5 years. Only a handful of authors have done that in history. I said, what's your platform like? Your names? He goes, what names? It's like, David, you've lost it. The most valuable thing I have is 250,000 hardcore fans' names. When I get a book, I can send it out and immediately get a New York Times bestseller list at that level because these people are sitting there waiting. It took me 20 years to build that list, and I didn't bother to start with my first book, which is by far the biggest. So if I was starting again, first piece of advice, collect every name you can. Go on Facebook, build your site. Collect. You don't talk to anyone without taking their names, because if you almost had 1 million mothers, you would be best-selling authors, right?
You have to get their permission.
Try to do that. The second thing I do is I just have more fun. You know, it's I think some of the funnest days were the early days at BEA and sitting out there. And I remember sitting at this booth. They were, I was late, so they put me in the gay and lesbian section with my Christmas book. There's a big naked guy in front of me holding a hat right here. And it's like, and I remember this woman comes by, and I thought she looks like a prostitute. She was. She had a book called From Beverly Hills Cop to Call Girl. And the guy came by with dreadlocks, and it's like, go ahead, author badges. And we just hung out because your authors, it's really cool to be an author. So just have a really good time, and that will come out in your writing. You know, yeah, it is a job, and you have to do it, but enjoy it. You know, make it good. So that, anyway, I can leave now. That's all I have to say.
I've always tried to do what Richard does, so I'm stepping up. Yeah, I like that. I'll just say really quick for me, the finish thing is the biggest thing. I think that is so important. I go to a lot of school and do a lot of assemblies, and finishing is such an important thing. But I want to echo what Richard said. Those names, they're just invaluable. That's the people that have supported you and made you who you are. It's just a fantastic thing to have. Really nice. All right, so let's do the next question, and then we'll go to the crowd question. So, who is your biggest inspiration? What inspired you to be a writer? We'll start with you.
Yeah.
We'll start with Richard. Richard. This is advice. Someone must have inspired you to want to be a writer.
My brother Mark.
I used to write this book with my brother Mark, and he just said, Rick, two things. First of all, chicks dig Shakespeare. Second, he goes, you're a better writer than you think you are. And he kept going, you can do this, and just keep writing. But what he did, he was really smart. He got me reading, started with John Steinbeck and O. Henry. What's cool about O. Henry? You ever read O. Henry? Short story, right? He just kind of mastered these really good little tales. It's like, well, that was fun. You could read it in a few minutes, and you know, he was a bathroom author. You could read while you're in the bathroom. And it's like, it's kind of how to tell stories. And so he just kind of looked at that, and I thought, I always wanted to be John Steinbeck, so I just found some authors that were kind of cool. I was going to say you, but you weren't freaking born yet, so.
Do I need to stand up now too? Okay, soak it up, ladies. It's like a young James Gandolfini right here. That's right. Okay, I grew up in a little tiny, very poor town on a farm, middle of nowhere in Orlando, California, and we had a little itty-bitty tiny library. And there was nothing else to do except read books in the library and shoot stuff. And if you look at those two things, you can see how my life has pretty much turned out. And so I read it when I was young. Actually, I discovered Lewis Moore was my single biggest probably writing influence, because the dude was an adventurer and he'd done everything and experienced everything, and then he wrote all this cool stuff. And I just always wanted to be an entertainer. And I just wanted to entertain people, and that's what I'm lucky enough to do now. So. I'm really thankful for that. And, you know, I'll say this, I just to share it a little bit, but impression growing up, my dad can't read. My dad's illiterate. So I grew up on a farm with a Portuguese family, and my dad doesn't read, and he thought reading was silly because he didn't understand how to do it. And I'm a best-selling novelist, you know. I tell stories read by tons and tons of people, and it's weird to think of that. It was all because I was introduced to somebody else's adventures when I was a kid, and it gave me a bigger world. And so I just have always wanted to pass that on and be an entertainer, and I appreciate it.
Ta-da. Okay. Certainly I can think of, you know, people who inspired me to be a writer, but I think one thing I want to point out is that inspiration needs to come from inside you. You know, just because somebody else did a great job of writing doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to want to write. But I was a little kid, I was 9 years old, and I was sitting down, I wanted to draw a picture of an army in battle with knights, good knights and bad knights, and different colors of armor. So I sat down and I took about 40 different pieces of paper. I laid them out on the floor and started drawing this battle scene.
And after I'd been working on it for about 5 or 6 days, I heard my mother talking to my dad in the other room. And she was whispering, and she was saying, "Do you think he's insane? It's so violent. You know, what is he doing? You know, what's his impetus to do this? You know, should we call the doctor, you know?" And then suddenly, about a week later, a guy came by while I was working on my painting, because I was with my drawings, so I was doing it every night for hours. And he said, my mom said, "This is a friend of ours from down the street, Dr. So-and-so," and introduced me, and he asked me some questions about my battle, you know, and I showed him, you know, the good guys were and the bad guys, and how if you look at this great big picture with the clouds and knights on each side fighting, you know, and you could see how the battle was just turning. And anyway, so he was very interested and very kind and polite. And when he was done, he went in and I heard him say to my mom, and she said, "Is he insane? What do you think?" He said, "Well, congratulations, you have an artist." Okay? I really think that that was an inborn temperament. I could not stop when I was growing up. If I wasn't drawing, I was painting. If I wasn't painting, then I would be sculpting. If I wasn't sculpting, I was doing something else. Eventually, I discovered Tolkien, and once I discovered Tolkien, I loved fantasy. I went and read everything that there was in the local library, and then I started going to bookstores and buying every fantasy book I could, and when I ran out of those, I started telling my own stories. And finally, I was telling a story to a friend, 16, and he just said, "Why don't you take all this crap and put it in a book?" And I realized, of course, that's what Tolkien did. It's just that easy, okay? Start from Shirley Collins. So that's how I got into fire. Oh, let's see if this works. There. Okay. One of my mentors early on was Dean Koontz. And I learned so many things from him just because my voice is coming away. I can't tell you any of the things I learned from him. The thing that I remember most is Dean saying that the first 1,000,000 words you write are practice. That's about general where the novels work. The first 1,000,000 words are practice. If you can get paid while you're practicing, great. By the time you've written 1,000,000 words, you really haven't quite gotten all the pieces in place yet. And he's probably right. I did some pretty good practice, and I learned how to get better and better as I practiced. But for those of you who are writing your novel, if you have been writing your novel over and over and over again for 15 years, get done with it and write the next one. So what you learn is by writing 10 novels, not by writing your first novel 10 times. Go on to the next thing, go on to the next thing, go on to the next thing, because that's when you learn stuff. And Dean Koontz, I think, kind of figured that out.
I'm not going to stand up.
Rebel?
My nickname is Red, so. No, it's that whole back thing, Okay. When I was growing up, I loved reading science fiction and fantasy. I started reading every fantasy thing I could get a hold of as soon as I could read, and then I kind of didn't notice when I crossed over around 12 and started putting in science fiction. To me, it was kind of all the same wonderful stuff. But some of my favorite authors were C.S. Lewis, and MacDonald, and Lloyd Alexander's Chronicles of Prydian got a hold of me. And there were things in those books that I never knew you could do. In The Black Culprit, there's a story, and I'm sorry if this is a spoiler, but it's been out for like 40 years. But there's a character that he introduces that is just an absolute egocentric jerk. You dislike him from the first time he strides onto the stage. And then by the time the book is finished, he sacrifices himself for everybody else and saves them. And you love him and you go, wow, because I did not know that you could get deeper into a character who seemed unlikable on the surface, and there could be reasons for the jerky things they're doing, and there could be things that destroyed their life, and that they could learn from other people, and that they could change, and that they could redeem themselves. and I had never seen that before. I didn't know that there were people I met that I could dislike, that maybe I could really like, even though they seemed dislikable. And that was such a revelation to me that I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to show people stuff like this that they've never seen before. And that's why I write for young adults, because you can't show adults nearly as much as you can show young adults.
I'm not a good moderator, but so my thing is, what inspired me most is, I don't know about you guys, but I always wanted to be a writer. I was born wanting to be a writer. I wrote my first book when I was like four. It's about horses, and I wasn't very good. But I've always been writing. And when I went to grade school, elementary school, I just told my teachers I wanted to be a writer. But I hated to read. And I had a librarian that, for some reason, saw something in me that was more than that. And she found a certain book, and she felt certain that if I would read it, it would change how I felt. I knew I wanted to write. I wanted to write the books that people would read. I felt no need to read. And she said, this book will change your life, but I didn't want to read it. And she would show up everywhere trying to get me to read it. Like, she'd pop into the cafeteria and be like, Overt, read this book. You're going to love it. And I said, no, I don't want to. She'd show up on the playground, running along the side. I still remember, Overt, read this book. You're going to love it. I said, no, I don't want to. I remember one time she was waiting for me outside of the boys' bathrooms. Yeah, and she had that book, and she said, Overt, read this book. You're going to love it. I said, no, I don't want to. She would be on my bus after school. Yeah, she was kind of a soccer librarian, but she was really great. And she would say, Overt, read this book. You're going to love it. I said, no, I don't want to. Everywhere I went, she was always following around, always popping up, always making a fuss, always trying to get me to read this book. And I always kept telling her no. I kind of felt like I was trapped inside a bad Dr. Seuss book. Yeah, I will not read that where I eat. I will not read that near a toilet seat. I will not read that on a bus. I will not read that if you make a fuss. I will not read that, no way, ma'am. I will not read that, my librarian, the end. And finally, one day after school, I had taken the bus home. She had not been on it. I got off the bus, walked to my house, opened my front door. And there, sitting at the dining room table with my mom, was my librarian. And she had that book in her hands, and she reached out and said, Overt, read this book, you're going to love it. And what could I do? My mom was there, I was kind of busted, so I thought, okay, whatever. And so I took the book from her, and I read it, and I love it. And darn it, ever since that day, I have loved to read. And the little book that she made me read was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And for me, as a writer, like, the inspiration came because I could suddenly see how he's put together a story, how he started and finished in the middle. Suddenly candy made sense at a whole new level. I just loved everything about it. And it was such an inspiration for me. But I really do believe what you were saying, like, it comes from inside. I always wanted to be a writer. But sometimes those outside sources, people that inspired me, almost all of you guys have books that inspired me, make something bigger and better. And so my advice is, make sure you're always reading. I mean, that's such a big inspiration, just that what everyone else has said, just those books that really motivate you to do something great. All right, so as a moderator, how about we take some questions from the audience? Does anyone want advice, maybe, and we can pretend to give it? Is that good? All right. Yes, way back there, the tall, handsome man in the Batman shirt. Excellent question. If I wanted to be a writer, but it doesn't have anything to write about, where do you get your inspiration from?
Okay, why do you want to be a writer if you don't have anything to write about?
Tricky question. It's a thinker.
That is the answer. If you don't have anything to write about, then you don't want to be a writer. I'm sorry if I'm a curmudgeon, but if you don't have anything to write about, then you don't want to be a writer.
I like the idea of being a writer.
I write 8 books a year to get the voices out of my head. I can't stop writing. I've got one novel after another that just fills the gaps as soon as I get one out. And when somebody asks, where do you get your ideas, my answer is, why would the rest of you stop them from coming? I think every writer is like me. It's just like you can't stop writing because there's one story behind that one, or another story behind that one. And please, if you don't have to be a writer, then get a real job, because if you're in love with the idea of being a writer, dude, it is not the TV show Castle, okay? my kids are sitting there in the front chair doing a little joke, because the running joke in my house is, you sit in a chair, and it looks like this. I eat a chip. I drink Coke Zero. I didn't start just shoveling chips in your face and making crap up all day. Sitting in a chair for, I kid you not, a short day, 8 hours, but like, you know, I got a deadline room, so I put in a 16-hour day. You know, so, no, the glorious life of a writer, no one's going to come and ask me to solve the crimes of Morgan County, okay? So, does Axel actually write anything? I've never seen him other than, like, for 5 minutes a month he writes. No, we just, we all want to be Nathan Fillion, but that is not real.
Axel, let's get another question. I think your hand was up, dark, long sleeve, all the way up to your palm with the odd object sticking out of your chest. Yes, Wolverine. The question was, you wrote Lex and Michael Bay, how many did you find a writing in Richardson Center, right?
7 books in the series. And I have no idea what they are. But I have faith they'll come, if they don't, I'll talk to them.
Very nice. Next question. Yes, in the green, young man in the green.
Do you guys find it, I would assume most, if not all of you, have agents, especially if you're like Star Wars books, things like that. Do you find that getting one as quickly as possible is advantageous, or how does the whole author agent relationship?
So you think Star Wars books is like another level of respect?
But there is no Star Wars books. My mom calls a few people. Excellent question. Agents. Anyone have an answer?
You know, that the publishing industry is changing a great deal. And depending upon the field that you're in, the type of book you're writing, you may not want an agent, okay? And so that's a really tough question to answer.
It's a really long answer.
Yeah. And the truth is, I wouldn't recommend that you run out and get an agent right away, unless you've got like a huge blockbuster bestseller and you think you can go out and sell 20 million copies. And then you have to ask yourself, if I put them up on Amazon.com myself without any publishing, would the series sell that well? Do I want an agent then either? You know, because then you've got the agents and the publishers taking their cut out of your pocket, and the truth is you can make a lot more money without them in the long run. So it's unfortunately in the last 3 years the answer to that question has changed so dramatically it's almost impossible to say.
I don't have one. I've got 16 books under contract right now to write for different things. And so you don't have to have an agent. It's not like it used to be. Biggest question I have for you is, how comfortable are you reading and understanding contracts? That's really what it comes down to.
Get comfortable. You can take classes. Learn.
And not only understanding them, but negotiating them. I was in a meeting in Hollywood once, and the guy that was a mouthpiece for these producers, we started talking about how much money we're going to want for producing this movie, and the answer was $6 million. And you start sweating and the lip is quivering. And, I was sitting there, and the head of Warner Brothers, President Warner Brothers, was like sitting there, and I was like, man, we don't want this guy talking for us when it comes to negotiating money. But we walked out of the meeting, and as soon as we walked out the door, every single other producer turned and said, from now on, you do the talking, Dave. Because I had no problem not saying that we wanted $6 million for our like 15 minutes once just came up and back. But I think you should be able to negotiate your contracts. You also have to understand them. And sometimes that can be really tricky. I once had a contract for a movie contract. I had to study it for a month before I understood everything that was wrong with that contract. And when I finally did negotiate the contract to the point where I was able to sell it, or able to sign it, I signed the contract. And later on, one of the heads of Paramount came to me, or the head of the legal department, and said, nobody ever signed those contracts. You screwed the producers on this contract. Nobody ever screws the producers. We would never sign that contract at Paramount. But I was able to cut through all the bull by, just studying it long enough and hard enough.
May I add one thing to what David just said? When you guys are starting, you're looking, you're really hungry, and someone might come up and say, I'm an agent, and you pay me $1,000 and I'll read your book. And you also, we have people address contracts to you. Someone came up, they were so excited, and you think they had just won you know, the jackpot. You came in, look at this. And I go, you just signed up to spend $5,000 for them to publish your book. And if lightning strikes, and I have seen this happen, if lightning strikes, your book becomes big, they will take almost all the money and they own you for the next 5 books. And so be really, really careful. Don't let your excitement get in the way, because the pirates came out to sea, they went into publishing. And just be really careful on these contracts. Talk to a friend who's a lawyer. I mean, fortunately, you know, we're not all Larry. And I looked at the contracts and they were, I understand them now, but they're very confusing. And so just be very careful before you sign anything. And if anyone asks you for money to make you rich, run.
Yeah. The money goes from the publisher to the agent to you, or from the publisher to you, or however it happens. It does not flow from you to them. So if they ask you to pay them money, run away.
That's weird, because I'm a non-Star Wars, author, and I do have an agent.
We have a great agent.
Yeah, I really like my agent's done bumping. That's another question. Yes.
Yeah, so thank you all so much for sharing all this money. You put me on the spot. It's really valuable. We love it. There's nobody in here from the publishing industry. If you were starting over today, fresh, clean slate, and you knew you'd be able to develop the content that you already have developed, would you go self-publish or would you go traditional?
Well, I am the king of self-publishing, or excuse me, the godfather of self-publishing. People say, why'd you keep self-publishing? It's like, because it's a very complex business getting it out there. Now, this is something just kind of think about, and just think about this for a minute. The world has changed, as Rebecca said, and it's really hard. You're Glenn Beck, okay? Glenn's my partner on my play series. He had a platform of more than 12 million people, actually closer to 15 million people, who listened to his radio station and reading his books. Now, if he goes on Amazon Kindle, and the books have, his books are probably 50 to 60% on e-books, you go on there and you sell it yourself, and where do we get 75% of that? You get 75% if you go direct?
70%.
Or you go to a publisher and you're looking closer at 10%. It's like, is a publisher going to make him sell 7 times the number of books? The truth is, they're not going to help him sell 2% more. They're all being driven by him. So why would he go with the publisher? Now, he's doing it just because he's kind of using it for other things he's doing. But why would you do that? And this is a tough question. And so the question that Kevin and Rebecca were talking about is like really valuable. It's like, do you want to do it? Is it, you know, I came with the publisher because I love my publisher, and they have done a lot. We have been a team, and they've gotten places that I just don't know how to get to. But sometimes that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be either or. It can be and. You can self-publish books and
hybrid
work in New York at the same time. It's harder and harder to do that. But you can think of it in those terms too.
I have that career in my head. All my books published with regular publishers. And they eventually went out of print, and I got the rights back. And now I'm reissuing them myself through Art Press and making more money by myself. So I did both. But you're asking us who got into it 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
It was a
whole different world then. And so I don't even know how to advise you guys other than just to say, read my books and study them.
This is the kind of thing we talked about at the Writers' Super Seminar, Writing Seminar, because we deal with the business end of it, and we spend 3 days on the topic. And this is such a complex question that, you know, literally I can't do it justice in an hour.
I started self-published, and we haven't had a couple of first book deal from it. So it's one of those things that as soon as I got my first book deal, because self-publishing with no audience at the time, it was a no-brainer for me to take the publishing contract when they offered it to me. So I think it's like you said, it's all going to come down to where you are in your career. I mean, if you're doing that, then holy crap, yeah. You got millions of people, you can do whatever you want. Yeah. If you got 500 people, then you know, take the publishing contract with you guys.
Yeah, I also think it depends on the amount of energy you have. Because some people are just amazing, and they can do things like Richard Paul. It was amazing what you did with your first book. I mean, that was unbelievable. So. Let's do, I think there's time maybe one or two more. I think you've been patiently waiting with your hand up a long time. Go, sorry.
Yeah, guys are talking about the business side of being an author, I'm curious if there are any authors that you think do a really good job of marketing themselves. I know you, besides you.
Tracy Hickman is down here. Brandon Sanderson does a great job marketing himself. I mean, well, that's why we put them on our Superstars Writing Seminar panel, because we picked the best people that we knew in the business for themselves, because that's what we're talking about here. There are so many people who are really fine writers who fail as business people in this industry. I happen to come from a family where my father had his own business, and so I was raised, you know, learning the principles of economics and how to run a business. And my first major in college was business and accounting. My dad wanted me to be a CPA and be in charge of running his businesses. So I'm used to thinking in terms of being a businessman, but there are an awful lot of people who come from fields so far outside of business that they just flounder when they try to start a business.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things people can do is take a business or an advertising class, because you're really creating a product and then you're the one putting it out there to a large extent. Even if you have a great publisher, you're still such a vital part. And so understanding that the writing is a business as much as a passion and a hobby really gives you an advantage, I think personally that's an important step.
Also, it's a different question depending on whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, because the way to market nonfiction is totally different. It's to make yourself into an expert in the field, to get yourself interviewed, to get on talk shows and build your platform that way, and then you can get the book out to them. It's not as easy just to be on talk shows and to sell fiction. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's a good point. Should we do one more, I think, or maybe two more? And it's way back.
Yeah, please.
Okay, Rob? So if you have five or six short stories, is it better to go to a publisher or publish them, sell through anthologies and that kind of stuff?
Kevin, have you guys ever seen short stories sold?
No, I mean, I was going to say, unless you're Ray Bradbury, who pulled off the short stories into one book all the time.
Daniel Lane,
yeah.
The very next panel is me and Larry Correa talking about whether you should write stories or novels.
Quite frankly,
in the audience right now.
Most anthologies and stuff nowadays, or most magazines, will only keep the rights to your story for a couple of months before they release them to you to go ahead and republish. So go ahead and try building yourself an audience by getting known, you know, nationally, and then go ahead and put your stories out anyway after they have the rights reverted to you.
Yeah, that's good. That's
self-publishing,
good.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm trying to be fair, yes. The question is, if you don't have anything out yet and you're writing a little bit every day, what's the balance between putting your effort into writing and marketing and doing that stuff and living your everyday life? Is that
right?
And getting a fan base.
I'm really a bad person to ask about this, because I should have listened to Kevin a long time ago. I'm not prolific. Someone told me at one of the panels, she's written 8 books since January. I got popped as that. January. I mean, only R.L. Stein can almost do that. The problem is, writing, I have attention deficit and I have Tourette syndrome, and writing's really hard for me. I love it, but it's painful, and so that's why my stories move quickly. I love marketing. That's what I do for fun. That's my hobby. And so, like, my wife has to come up and get mad at me. It's like, quit marketing and write. And so, but you really, I guess it depends where you are on your career. You know, where you're going. Like, I'm spending a whole lot of time marketing, like Michael May, because I feel like I'm building the series. And which, by the way, this is the first, you guys are all smarter than me. You've all done series. Like, this is the first time I've done series. It's awesome because the people come with me. I had no idea. It's like, my books are showing, like the Walk series, that book is showing the same it did last, you know, last week as it did when it came out 3.5 years ago. I'm like, holy cow, it's like, I should have done this 20 years ago when I started. The series are great. And so that kind of, that's the best way I know to like build it up.
We've been trying to keep that secret from you.
Yeah, thank you guys. And I get those who invite me to the superstar camp, thank you. But you just kind of have to see because it is that balance. If you have all these great works, then start working on your marketing more because you got to get them out.
There are brilliant authors who market terribly, and there are terrible authors who market brilliantly.
But you didn't say James Patterson.
No, I didn't say James
Patterson. Well, that's from the right to 12 books a year.
But seriously, you have to figure out what your own personal balance is, and for each of us it's going to be a little bit different. And, you know, if you write brilliantly enough, it doesn't matter if you market, because other people will market for you, the word of mouth will carry it. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, one thing to keep in mind, marketing is kind of like it's like throwing gasoline on the barbecue, okay? Or think of it as an ignition in a car. You start the car, but you can't drive very far with the starter motor, or else you're gonna burn it out. That's all marketing is. If your book isn't good enough to carry, it doesn't carry. So you see people, they come out, they have all this publicity, and the book dies 2 weeks later. You see people with no publicity, just like you said, it's just like it grows and grows and grows. We use it just to launch it, you know, sometimes throw a little kerosene to get the barbecue going, but if the book isn't good, it's not going to go.
Apropos of marketing, one of my favorite sayings is, advertising is expensive, publicity is cheap. Keep in mind that if you're a brand new writer and you think you're going to pay for ads and get everybody to buy your book, you are 99.99% wrong. Find a way to make yourself marketable with publicity. Get people to blog about you. Get people to interview you. Have your own blog and attract readers that way. Make them come to you for something, but don't try to pay people to come to you because you're going to end up with a very large hole in your pocket.
Something that I did when I was starting out, the reason my first self-published book did as well as it did is because I found a community of people who would be into the kind of thing I was selling, and they already knew me, they knew my name, they knew I could write, they knew my personality, so they were invested in me personally. So right off the bat, I had, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 people on a gun forum, on an internet gun forum, who were like rooting for me, because I'm rooting for the home team. So that was I had my little groundswell of marketing thing. And then blog, and don't be afraid to, I mean, if you're proud of your writing and you think your writing's good, don't be afraid to put samples of your writing out there where people can actually read it.
Potato chips, we call them. Give them a little bit. If they like it, they might come back to you for more.
Got 1 minute left.
Let's wrap. Maybe everyone say.
I'm teaching a writing workshop here in Provo in 5 weeks. There are some samples up here. If you would like to get a copy of the flyer,
great.
Yeah. And we've also got superstars.
Yeah, your table. Oh. The
spring, I should say.
Go ahead.
Well, Word Fire Press and Kevin J. Anderson's books are at booth 1031 on the floor. And if you have more questions, feel free to come over and ask them while purchasing a book.
Excellent. As a concluding remarks,
you can find me online. My name is hard to spell, so just Google Monster Hunter Nation or Monster Hunter International, and the first thing that pops up. And I've got a series of writing advice things on there too that might be able to help you guys out.
Oh, and McFarlane has a potato kit. If you don't get that yet, definitely.
Just go to www.davidfarlane.com.
Yeah, you know, that's